Hey everyone, Mike Lanana here with Hudson Belinsky, who a second ago was wearing sunglasses, but now he's going without the sunglasses. Oh, he's reaching for him. He's reaching for him. This is a high school podcast. We just put out a ton of content this week. We have in front of us right now the preseason high school All-America teams, and that's going to be the main focus of our podcast here today. Without further ado, I think I'm going to kick it to Hudson. Hudson, talk a little bit about these All-America teams. What are you thinking?
It's an exciting group. I mean, all of these guys were ranked in our preseason top 100, with the exception of Trevine Carter from Tennessee, who, you know, maybe we should have been a little bit higher on. It's obviously a really exciting group. I've seen a lot of these guys a lot. We had four unanimous first team guys. Jason Groom, left-hand pitcher from New Jersey. Riley Pint, right-hander from Kansas, and then the two SoCal outfielders, Blake Rutherford and Mickey Moniak, and then Delvin Perez was actually one vote away from being unanimous first team. He was ranked, one scouting director ranked him third in the middle infield group. So we almost had five. Decent number of underclassmen got votes, too. Hagen Danner, Alex Terrell, Royce Lewis, Hunter Green, and Nicholas Prado. All of those guys, with the exception of Terrell, are Southern California jokers. Terrell, big power, Under Armour All-American as a junior. So it's a fun group. I think that it was my first time putting it together. Mm-hmm. And it was really cool to see kind of the response from as many scouting directors as we did get. And obviously we couldn't, Baseball America could not exist without scouts and, you know, people sharing information with us. So we really appreciate it. And hopefully, I mean, last year John wrote, for the magazine and online that basically last year was the first team All-Americans were like the All-America team was a pretty good predictor of the first round. Seven of the eight first-team position players last year went in the first round, the exception being Chris Betts, who went 52nd overall. And, you know, that may have been because of him needing to have Tommy John surgery after the season. This group that's voted on the first team, those guys are probably, like, a lot of those guys will be first-round picks. So, it was exciting. I'm happy we did it.
Yeah, no, I'm happy we did it too. You know, and you talk about the four unanimous guys, and if you've been following us for a while and reading our stories and looking at our tweets and
Vines,
Instagrams,
Snapchats.
If you've accepted our LinkedIn connections and have read our private messages to you,
if you've friended us on MySpace,
yeah, if you're my friend on Friendster, then you know. You know all about Jason Groom and Riley Pint, two pitchers who, you know, when you talk about the draft coming up, two guys that you hear, you know, possibly near the top. I mean, what's the latest that you're hearing on these two? You know, where do you see them? If the draft was held today, I mean, where would you see them possibly being taken?
I think Groom is, I think I've been pretty clear about this. I think he's the best player in the class, college or high school. You talk about if you're in a video game, if you're making your character in a video game, or you're doing My Career Mode, this is how you would draw it up. This is right. A guy who's left-handed, mm-hmm. which plus number one, fastball is 92, 95. He's got an easy plus breaking ball. The last time I saw him was an indoor workout on Martin Luther King Day a month ago today. He was loose and easy, real short arm action, super clean finish. He was, you know, 87, 91, you know. But, you know, I heard more recently he's been 92, 95 in bullpens. He's got a pretty good changeup, too.
Yeah.
The best change, you know, the best I've seen his changeup was he pitched – leading up to the area code games, the Northeast Yankees played on the Cape against Orleans. And so he was facing guys like Brian Reynolds and Kyle Lewis, like guys who also are, you know, pretty good prospects themselves, and changeup looked pretty good that day. His changeup, actually, we also included a best tools section, like when we asked for votes for the All-American team, and not every scouting director filled that out because that's, you know, that's kind of really tipping their hands.
Right.
But his changeup, actually, there was one ballot that ranked his curveball as the best off-speed pitch in the class, and then ranked his changeup the third best off-speed in the class. So when you're talking about a guy who's got, in the opinions of some, has 3+ pitches, and is, you know, only 17 years old.
Yeah. I mean, certainly seems to have the potential to have 3+ pitches.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone would argue that the potential is there. You know, changeups, you know, I think you're going to see some variation on changeup grades just because it's, they often get graded up based on feel. Mm-hmm. You know, and some changeups you'll see that just really have great fade and kind of disappear, but some are just like guys who can really hit their spots. And Grooms is more along those lines, I would say. He knows how to use it, knows when it's going to be an effective pitch for him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I'm pretty much all in on Jason Groom. I think he's a steal at number one. Mm-hmm. I think he's a steal anywhere in this draft. So, but Riley Pint, whew, man, hoochie mama, to use a John Manuel term.
Yeah, yeah, no, that is one way to describe him. I mean, he can bring it up there, velo-wise. I've seen him 98, 99, but mm-hmm. I'm hearing he might be even a little higher than that now, right?
Yeah, so he threw in a bullpen on Sunday, and a couple sources confirmed he was into triple digits. The two sources that I talked to had 101, where there was 102 was floated out there on Twitter, which I don't deny the accuracy of that. I think you know, some guns are just going to be a little hotter than others.
Yeah.
But you know, guy who's throwing 101, and then the big thing though about the bullpen that he threw, it's like it sounds like he was in the zone mm-hmm. and had feel.
I like that feeling. I like when I'm in the zone.
He was in the zone.
Yeah.
He was in the zone, and in the strike zone.
You mean the strike zone, yeah.
But, so that's the concern with him. Because, like, even at, you know, at the Eric Cud games, which is where you saw him, mm-hmm. you know, he had, you know, he's 95, 98. He's got his, you know, above average, at least above average breaking ball. And he threw a pretty nasty changeup that just disappeared. So he's got all that. You know, if this guy's in the strike zone and hitting his spots, holy smokes. I mean, we're talking about a frontline guy.
Hoochie mama pitcher.
A hoochie mama. Yeah. A hoochie mother. But, yeah, so Pint, there are some reliever believers there, mm-hmm. Which I think stems from...
I think they like to be called relievers.
Relievers. Mm-hmm. Justin Reliever.
Yeah.
You know, so he's got a little head snap in the delivery, which is usually a red flag. You know, one thing that, you know, that Teddy Cahill, when he was researching in Georgia last year, that same kind of issue was applied to Dakota Chalmers, who ended up being a first or supplemental pick of the A's. Mm-hmm. And one kind of idea was that, hey, as this guy fills out and adds muscle, and also, you know, maybe lengthens the stride a little bit, you know, that head whack is going to fade, you know, as he kind of gets stronger. And so I think that idea also applies to Pint. I mean, he's, you know, he weighed in at the area code games at 6'5", 195. And he's got these big, wide shoulders that he's going to put on from there. He's going to put on good weight. And apparently that has happened this fall. We'll know a little bit more as he kind of gets, you know, going. But you're talking about a guy who, if he's in the zone, has stuff wise is unparalleled, you know, and
filthy stuff,
nasty.
Yeah, nasty.
A pint of nasty.
Nasty to a T. Yeah. Yeah. A pint of nasty.
But so
we're terrible people.
We're the worst. This podcast. We should not. We should just stop recording. No.
We're gonna keep going. We're gonna power through.
So. A couple, so on that first team, the two outfielders also getting getting unanimously voted on that first team are Mickey Moniak and Blake Rutherford, two guys that you've had the opportunity to see. Kind of what are your thoughts on those guys?
Yeah, no, Solomon Area Codes, you know, they're playing for a stacked Brewers team.
Yeah.
Or that outfield, they were, you know, they were joined with Avery Tuck out there in the outfield, who's on our second team here. And yeah, no, they're both impressive. I mean, Blake Rutherford, I feel like he had a hit every time he came out to the plate, you know, and he put on a pretty good show in the home run derby too, from what I can remember.
Yeah.
There, and you know, a different kind of player from Moniak, but. Yeah, I mean they were impressive to me, and it was cool seeing them bat. I think they batted 1-2 in the lineup, or was Avery Tuck sandwiched in between them there?
That I can't remember off the top of my head.
I don't remember, but yeah, I mean, two guys that, you know, potential first rounders.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, what's kind of been the buzz that you've been getting?
So I know Rutherford's going to get seen this weekend. He's playing on Saturday. Moniak is apparently has added a little bit of good weight.
Yeah, he is a bit thin, or at least he was at Area Codes.
Yeah, he's kind of fits that, like, I mean, he's just a high waisted guy with like a projectable lower half, you know. So it'll be interesting to see how that weight affects him. You know, I think there is some concern about the power there. I mean, because he's, as far as guys who make contact, he's as good as anybody in this class.
Right.
But if he can do that with a little bit more power, and, you know, I don't think anybody's expecting him to, you know, start launching bombs to the opposite field, but, you know, if he can be more of a doubles hitter, especially because he's got such great feel for, you know, going gap to gap right now.
Right.
Then that kind of cements him.
He was a doubles machine at Area Codes.
Yeah.
From what I remember. And he also made, you know, easily the best defensive play at Area Codes.
Yeah, best of defensive play of the summer.
What, really, I mean, you know, it should have been a top 10 highlight play all summer long. I mean, it was, say hey, you know, kind of catch.
It was. There's video of it on our site, and, oh, man, it was
Hoochie Mama.
Hoochie Mother. It was incredible, but, and you know, the things about Moniak. Moniak, he's a plus runner.
Yeah,
he's got plus or better contact skills. Really good at putting the ball in play. Really knows how to use his speed, though. Can steal bases right now, and it's, you know, down the line, this isn't a guy who's, like, you know, under 4 seconds or anything. He's like 4.1, 4.15. So he's not like a guy who's going to steal, you know, going to be like Billy Hamilton kind of speed.
Right.
But he knows how to use it. He's a really good base runner. He's got this mentality of every time he steps up to the plate, he's going to score. So, you know, I'm all in on Mickey Moniak. Rutherford has a little bit more swing and miss, but significantly more power as well. And Rutherford, you know, a step slower than Moniak, a guy who's more 4-2 to 4-3 out of the box. But still has a chance to play center field, and they both can throw out too. So you're talking about guys who, you know, to differing degrees are five tool guys.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, you talk about tools, and obviously talking about Moniak's athleticism and fielding and all that. You know, another player comes to mind to me immediately is Delvin Perez. You know, someone who made another highlight reel play, you know, down in Jupiter that you saw live. I had to watch the YouTube video later on, but, you know, he's a guy who, you know, out of Puerto Rico, who I know a lot of scouts are buzzing about. And, you know, like you said, he's one vote away from being unanimous himself. I mean, what's your take on him? I mean, what sort of things have you heard on Delvin?
There was a workout showcase kind of thing that they did down in Puerto Rico a couple weeks ago. He was apparently good there, which is no surprise. I mean, the things about him, in terms of just guys who are quick twitch, he's unmatched in this class, maybe college or high school. It's just everything he does is incredibly quick, and, you know, he's still learning how to use it all. When you have, you know, he can get to anywhere in the infield, you know, He can go steal a second baseman's ball if he needs to. So, but, you know, so he's, it's a matter of, you know, not overrunning his, not out-punting his coverage. That's not the right way to use that phrase, but, you know.
Well, usually when you're talking about athletes, you want to talk about punters, you know. Right. Some of the most athletic, athletic, you know, sports figures are punters, but continue, yeah.
He can throw, too, so if, yeah. if you want a fake punt, I mean,
that's true.
Delvin Perez, man, he can really throw.
You know, fourth and six, fourth and five, if you want to just go ahead and try to fool him and sneak that first down in there.
Honestly, then there are other guys on this All-America team who are football players. Mm-hmm. As I eat a grape, Taylor Trammell. You know, I was having a conversation with him prior to the Under Armour All-America game. He's a second teamer. And I asked him what position he played in football, and he said athlete. Mm. And so, you know, if there's an athlete, a guy who I just want to give the ball to in any sport, it's got to be Delvin Perez. I mean, this, it's plus-plus speed. It's a plus-plus arm.
Yeah.
And there's big bat speed there, too. He's, you know, the swing is inconsistent at this point. Pitch recognition is, you know, still coming along. But a young hitter who has a lot of the ingredients of a star player.
Sounds like someone you can really dream on.
Yeah. And while we're on the athlete kick, I mean, the third baseman on this first team is Josh Lowe, who, you know, according to some people who we, you know, we've talked to, has a guy who has multiple sevens on the card on the scouting scale. I mean, the power is undeniable. You watch this guy take batting practice, and he's just hitting moonshots. Laser line drives to the pole side. He's also a plus runner, can really throw at third base. We didn't do utility guys, but he would, I mean, he's 91, 94 with the plus change up on the mound and right. quality slider as well. So he's, you know, and as outside of the Delvin Perez category, I would say he's the best athlete. I mean, and that's if we're not considering Groom. I mean, I think Groom's an incredible athlete, and just in terms of his balance and
right.
the ease of his delivery, it's just an unbelievable.
I mean, hey, pitchers are athletes too.
Pitchers are athletes. That's true. Yeah. But yeah, if I could pick one athlete to give the ball to in any sport, it would be Delvin Perez. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Looking at the rest of this first team, I know a guy who stands out to me is Cooper Johnson. You know, mm-hmm. behind the plate, a kid I've talked to him a couple times in the past, you know, out in Long Beach for area codes, and, you know, very intelligent. You can just tell that he has a good feel for what he's doing behind the plate. You know, I asked him a little bit about what it was like catching Riley Pine, and he went in depth, and that was just a fun conversation, you know, talking about, you know, talking to a prospect and the prospect talking about a prospect. And I know people rave about what he can do behind the plate, and I know when I saw him, he didn't have a great showing with the bat, but it seems like, you know, there could be some potential there with him as well. I mean, what are your thoughts on Cooper Johnson?
Yeah, I think he's clearly, in my opinion, he's the best defensive catcher in the class. Mm-hmm. And he got a lot of votes for best defensive player in the class, for the top tools, survey that was on the All-America ballot. He can really throw, too. I mean, you're talking about a guy whose pop time's, you know, in the 1-8 kind of window there. The bat is the question mark, and we had Cooper on the podcast following the Under Armour All-America game, which was basically a home game for him at Wrigley Field, and he talked about that, and he says he believes he can hit. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anybody questions the bat speed. This is a guy who, you know, you watch him take batting practice, and it looks pretty good. The swing is has a U-y path to it, so like kind of looks like a, you know, sideways parentheses. Mm-hmm. So you worry about things like topspin. You worry about things like being in and out of the zone quickly. Mm-hmm. But the raw ingredients are there for him to hit. Mm-hmm. The pitch recognition is an issue for him. One thing when I talked to him about when he faced Greg Valese in the Under Armour All-America game, and he noticed something that Valese was doing with his glove you know, when he was fidgeting around with his grips. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Cooper saw that and then, you know, punched a line drive to right center, you know, because he knew a breaking ball was coming. Mm-hmm. So he's got those kind of instincts that I don't think are teachable, mm-hmm. That just come naturally to some athletes. But, you know, the team that takes him is going to be, you know, aware that they are buying a defense-first player who has some potential offensively, but it's going to be a project offensively.
Right.
How about some of these other first-team guys? Who else have you had eyes on? I think you've had eyes on Kevin Gowdy, who's who's one of the first-team pitchers.
Yeah, UCLA commit. Yeah, I saw him throw, and the one thing, I was impressed with the slider that he was throwing. It looked like the slider had good movement on it, getting a lot of swings and misses on it. I think he was, when I saw him, high 80s, low 90s, but, you know, certainly seemed like there's room for more with him. I mean, it seems like a guy who, you know, obviously UCLA knows what they're doing when they're recruiting pitchers, you know, so, you know, certainly it's someone to keep an eye on. Yeah, I mean, what have you heard on Gowdy?
I actually haven't talked to anybody recently who's seen him, mm-hmm. But you're right. The slider is nasty.
I got a pretty, you know, if you follow me on Vine or follow me on Twitter, you may have seen a Gowdy slider at one point. It was very pretty.
What he also has going for him is he's got a long stride. Mm-hmm. And so the hardest pitch I've ever seen from him was 94 at Perfect Game National. And I never saw that again. It was mostly like 89, 91, 92.
Right. That's what I saw him at, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then he also, and he didn't, I don't, if I recall, he didn't use a changeup at Area Codes. And he threw one or two changeups at Perfect Game National. And so his changeup, and then he threw a couple in, and I wasn't there, I just watched it on video, at the Perfect Game All-American Classic in San Diego. He threw the changeup there. And so the changeup comes in at the same speed. It's like 81, 82 as his slider, and it goes in the opposite direction. So you have a guy who projects to be pitching with a plus fastball, who has command, who repeats well, who's a good athlete, long stride, good extension, ball jumps on you, whether it's a fastball or an off-speed pitch. Mm-hmm. And then you have two off-speed pitches that are going in opposite directions but look the same out of the hand.
Yeah.
So it's... I mean, at this point, the argument, you know, for who the second right-hander in the class is behind Pint is between Gowdy and Anderson at this point. Mm-hmm. And Forrest Whitley is also off to a good start.
Right.
But, man, Gowdy just has so many weapons. It's hard to – he is committed to UCLA, but it's hard to imagine that he doesn't go high enough to convince him to go play pro ball.
Right, and you mentioned Ian Anderson, and anyone who hasn't yet, please go to baseballamerica.com and read Hudson's latest story on Anderson. Very interesting read, you know, looking at him and looking at Jeff Hoffman and Mike Trout, two players, you know, from that area, from the Northeast, and, you know, kind of their path to professional baseball, and, you know, whether or not Ian Anderson could kind of take a similar path, too. I mean, I really enjoyed the story, Hudson, so.
Thanks. I mean, it was fun to write, and it was fun to research the... I mean, Ian was just a great interview. He was a real sharp kid. I mean, he's committed to Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got the grades. But you know, he had a good understanding of who he is as a pitcher and what he needs to do to get better, and you know, just a good perspective on Northeast baseball players. And Hoffman was similar. Hoffman, was even taller and probably even lankier coming out of high school than Anderson is.
Right.
And, you know, obviously blew up when he got to East Carolina. But also just, like, looking at things like playing multiple sports. And, you know, Trout played football and basketball. And, I talked to Billy Godwin, who was the coach who recruited both Hoffman and Trout. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, one thing he said was, you know, a lot of Trout's baseball athleticism stemmed from being, you know, learning how to use his body in multiple ways and building that athleticism on the football field.
Right.
So, I, you know, it was just cool to get so many perspectives on it. And being from the Northeast, I had a pretty good idea, but to get expert opinions on it was awesome. It was fun to write. I'm glad I did it.
Yeah, I'm glad you did it too.
So let's get into the second team.
Let's do it.
We've been joking around on Twitter about Flo.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to go to the third team, I think, for the best Flo. Mm-hmm. Or did Bo Bichette make the team? I guess he didn't. Mm-hmm. He received votes. Bo Bichette was, the son of Dante Bichette, brother of Dante Bichette.
He still is his son.
Yeah. There are some rumors that the Flo is gone. He tweeted that he was going to get rid of it. But another Flo guy, Nicholas Quintana, a guy who you've had eyes on. Nicholas Quintana and Carter Kaboom, the two middle infielders on this second team, both guys I believe you've had eyes on. Your thoughts on that?
Quintana really impressed me in Jupiter. I think he raked.
Yeah.
He was on Eva Shield? Was he on the championship? Yeah. Yeah, no, he was really impressive. I mean, he's on the smaller side.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, he's certainly opened some eyes. And yeah, Carter Kaboom is a guy who seems like, he's a Clemson commit. He's someone who has baseball bloodlines, the whole Kaboom family. He has the last name.
Yeah.
The kind of last name that you look for. You kind of hope he gets to Clemson because they have Seth Beer and Carter Kaboom. And, if you have the two of them in the middle of the order, I mean, that's a pretty intimidating middle of the order. But yeah, no, both guys, I've seen both, and both have been impressive. I haven't seen Kaboom at his best. I know when he's in his zone, he can handle the bat.
Yeah, I mean, Kaboom, I really like him. I think, in terms of the timing and ability to use his tools offensively, mm-hmm. I think he's right behind Moniak, mm-hmm. In terms of, and also being a right-handed hitter. And the reason that I say that is because of his performance in Jupiter was down. It seemed like Kaboom had kind of changed his approach a little bit going into Jupiter. He was much more aggressive. There was a lot more swing and miss, which, there wasn't much swing and miss early in the summer. And so I'm fine to give him a mulligan on that. This is a guy who, in the Under Armour All-America game, took a really competitive at-bat against Riley Pint, who was bumping 97, 98, mm-hmm. and, Kaboom went into that at bat with no fear,
mm-hmm.
And he plays the game with no fear, and he's got a chance to play shortstop. I think he's a really special player, and, Clemson will be very lucky to get him if he gets there, because he's got a competitive fire to him as well. He plays the game, he knows how good he is, he knows he's going to beat you, and he plays with that fire.
Mm-hmm.
Quintana, I remember watching. I was over on one field watching the Texas scout team in the Texas Scout Rangers, or maybe the Yankees in Jupiter. Mm-hmm. They had Ulysses Cantu and Hudson Sanchez. I was watching them on one field, and the Evo Shield Canes were playing on another field, and I saw a ball go up in the air, just a moonshot, and I'm like, "Who hit that on another field?" And it turned out it was Quintana, and I knew just because of his track record with Team USA, you knew this guy could hit. But that kind of power, I'm not sure I ever realized that he had that.
Yeah.
That in him. And his brother is also, I hadn't connected the dots on this, but his brother, I believe his name is Zach Quintana, was a third round pick a couple years back.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got some bloodlines, he's got a baseball family, and hitters going to hit. So, when you look at guys who are hitters in the big leagues, most of those guys, their track record is always of hitting. There's some questions defensively. He probably doesn't fit best at shortstop, but as an offensive second baseman, we've seen guys like that go pretty good in the draft. One guy who comes to mind is Forrest Wall a couple years back,
right.
A guy in the Rocky system who you've covered. Mm-hmm. So that kind of similar profile, different player, but similar profile in that the bat is really, really live and really going to play.
Right. Sticking with the second team, I think it's time to talk about Jesus Luzardo.
Little baby Jesus.
Yeah. as his Twitter handle.
Sweet baby Jesus.
Yeah. He's a guy who, was very, very impressive when I saw him at Area Codes. Venezuelan heritage, a guy who looks up to Johan Santana. and mm-hmm. you know, could be in some ways similar to Santana with his repertoire.
Yeah,
you know, a guy who, you know, has two quality off-speed pitches, and really it seems like he has just a feel for what he's doing on the mound. It's, of the pitchers that I saw, that I've seen, you know, out of all these teams, he seemed like one of the more polished arms.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what your thoughts were on him, but...
Yeah, he... I'm all in on this guy. He got some votes for closest to the majors in the Best Tools survey.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about a guy who previously, you know, before this spring, was pitching at, you know, 90, 93, you know, bump a four, with a true plus changeup.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm a fan of this slurvy kind of breaking ball that he has.
I know he's talked about trying to throw two different breaking balls
in
the past.
Yeah, he throws one a little harder, and then he throws one that's more of a get-me-over that has a little bit more depth and is slower.
Yeah.
You know, it would be interesting to see what happens when he's at the next level, be that Miami or Pro Ball.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, recently, you know, not in his most recent outing. His most recent outing, he was like 90, 94 again. But earlier, a couple of weeks back, he was hitting 97.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're talking about a left-handed pitcher who's doing things like that, that's not a college guy. You know, those guys don't end up in school usually. So you have to imagine that he's, you know, we ranked him 13th in the high school class enter, but, you know, this is before he even, you know, picked up a ball this spring.
Right.
And here he is coming out, touching 97.
Mm-hmm.
That's a game changer.
Yeah.
You know, when you're talking about a guy who goes from having plus fastball velocity to plus,
mm-hmm.
And we'll see if he can get there more consistently going forward. That's really exciting. And the other thing about him is that he didn't usually rest so early in the offseason. So I believe he shut things down October 1st,
mm-hmm.
And came out rested and really, you know, working on his body and making sure that he's aware of his throwing program and getting ready to be at the next level, whether that is Miami or, you know, in pro ball as a second round kind of pick.
Right. Yeah, and I know when you had reported that he had touched 97, I know I was excited because, you know, from what I had seen, just the polish that he had, and I mean, he's a good kid, you know, just from talking to him, you know, briefly, you know, he seems like he's got a good head on his shoulders and
good family. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, no, it was certainly, you know, exciting to hear that he's touching that. I mean, he's, you know, obviously, I mean, we ranked him 13th before he even did that, so we think highly of him here.
So another guy who you've also had eyes on mm-hmm. at the Area Code Games, here's Forrest Whitley.
Yeah.
Who's also, you know, was off to a pretty good start.
Mm-hmm.
But what were your, I think this will be a cool exercise. Just go over your thoughts on what you saw from him at the Area Code Games, which maybe wasn't his best performance.
Right.
But, you know, just so we can kind of compare and contrast notes on that. What were your thoughts on him at, you know, in Long Beach?
Well, I mean, first of all, he's a big boy.
Mm-hmm.
A very, very big boy. I think we have him listed here, 6'6", 253 pounds. That's what stands out to you first. He at Area Codes, he had his moments. He was a little inconsistent with his breaking ball.
Mm-hmm.
There are times, I know I have I've just pulled up a vine that I took of him where he got a called strike three on it on the corner. I mean, there were points where it worked for him. He was mostly 91, 92, but you'd have to think there, you know, there's a little more room there,
mm-hmm.
velo wise for him. I mean, he's got that thick lower body, you know, the quads and thighs that, you know, you'd like to see. And, yeah, I mean, performance wise, he was just okay, but he definitely, you know, just from a distance, you know, you're gonna see him. You don't need binoculars to see him. So
yeah,
he stood out from that standpoint.
So, and I don't know if I've shared this with you before. So this off season, he shed about 30 pounds of bat weight, and he comes out throwing just cheese. I mean, he's apparently up to 97.
Mm-hmm.
And the highest I'd seen from him previously was 95, maybe once touching 96. But a guy who can also really spin it,
mm-hmm.
Through like a hard cutter or, you know, hard slider, you know, when he was with Team USA, Tournament of Stars, and then also, you know, a more vertical breaking ball.
Mm-hmm.
and you know, Will Mixon a changeup too. So has so many pitches and comes at you with the mentality that he's going to strike you out. But you know, so now that his body's in better shape, you know, it's starting to look pretty good. He's another guy who seems to be going in the right direction. You know, at least he was. He injured his thumb in a workout about a week ago, so he's going to miss about 3 weeks. But thankfully, it is his non-throwing thumb, and he can still continue to work out, and just can't be in game action right now. So it's not like he'll have to shut it down and start it all over again. So you know, maybe, you know, in the grand scheme of things, a good thing in that, you know, if this guy is going to play pro ball, he can have some rest mixed in, you know, before, you know, because it's going to be a long season for him in terms of you're starting up in Texas right now. They're playing down there already.
Right.
And then trying to get ready to, you know, to go through a whole pro season and likely, you know, instructional league. You know, it's good to have a little bit of rest mixed in there. Maybe a blessing in disguise there. Certainly you don't want to see anybody injured, but the signs are encouraging with Forrest Whitley for sure.
Right. You know, and sticking with arms, you know, Reggie Lawson's a guy that I've seen. I was very impressed when I saw him in Long Beach. I mean, he struck out the side when he came in. He was 92, 94, really sharp curveball. It seemed just free and easy, and, you know, guys just weren't hitting it up, you know, picking it up. You know, I think the shadows were kind of creeping over home plate at that point too, so that probably helped. But he was someone who really stood out to me, and I know Matt Manning is a guy who's gotten a lot of buzz too. I mean, what are your thoughts on those two?
Lawson, an electric arm, and yeah, a really live fastball, not just velocity wise, because he's not the kind of guy who's touched, you know, 97 or anything. He's probably more 91, 93, 94, something like that.
Yeah.
And a good breaking ball, not you know, a plus breaking ball at this point, but what's good about him is just he's a good athlete. He repeats his delivery well, and also the breaking ball is going in the right direction. You compare it to where it was at PG National, to where it was at Tournament of Stars, to where it was at Area Code Games, where it was really an effective pitch for him.
Mm-hmm.
It made progress every time. So, you know, that's something you certainly have to look for in these guys, in high school athletes, is that they are going in the right direction. And I wrote a feature on Nolan Jones, who was a first-teamer, a guy who also has the same kind of deals, going in the right direction, added good weight, you know, really played well in Jupiter. So guys who are going in the right direction. Manning is also, I would say, fits into that mold a little bit. His father played in the NBA. He's about 6'5", 200 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
He looks even taller than that. He's lanky. He's also still playing basketball. At least about a week ago, he was still playing basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And his team's very good. You know, I wish I could get in to go see him play basketball. It'd be nice to see that guy throwing down some dunks.
Yeah. And Riley Pyatt plays some basketball, too.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he played this year or not. But like Pint took BP at the Under Armour game and is just like dropping bombs at Wrigley.
Yeah.
Which is just like, what can't this guy do? But Manning, a little bit of a long arm swing. So you know, whenever you have that, you're gonna have some relievers. But also a quality breaking ball. He was good in, you know, he showed some stuff at the Area Code Games. He was good at the Arizona Senior Fall Classic. He was really good in Jupiter. And he's 6'5 and projectable with a fastball that's been up to 96 and, you know, can really spin a breaking ball too. So,
yeah,
you know, lots of encouraging signs there. Now, who else on this first team, this second team have you seen? You've seen Ben Rortvedt, right?
I have seen. I mean, the biggest thing that stood out to me with him is he had just the best guns of anyone I saw.
Gun show. Jupiter.
It was a gun show behind the plate. I mean, the dude's ripped. I mean, you know, so that stood out the most to me. I've seen him. I've seen Avery Tuck. We touched on a little bit earlier. I've seen Joe Rizzo. I mean, who of those guys do you think, you know, before we move on to the third team, is worth mentioning here?
They're all so good, and yeah. That's the thing. Like, we could go on and on about all these guys.
Yeah.
I think so. Rizzo, you could argue, is the best pure bat in the class, and has all, you know, some serious over the fence power, pull side. Excels against good velocity. In Jupiter, when he was, you know, facing upper 80s guys, he was kind of just content to pepper the opposite field and stay back on stuff. But that guy's, you know, that guy's tools are built for you know, professional pitching.
Right.
Defensively, some people like him. He's going to play shortstop. When I talked to him in Jupiter, he said he was going to play shortstop in the spring. You know, some teams have worked him out. At a private workout, I heard that he was catching, which kind of fits the mold with his. He's got this like stocky, not quite Costanza build, but you know, like he's 5'11", 215, and he's a decent athlete.
He can lift 100 pounds just right over his head.
He can 100 pounds right over his head.
Yeah,
he can rip a phone book.
Yeah,
the whole book, not just one page.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good. Rortvedt, I mean, it's the gun show. I mean,
yeah.
And the thing about Rortvedt, there's some power there. It's, you know, it's a solid average arm, really quick transfer, good athlete behind the plate, and in game action, like, you know, you don't notice a good catcher, and like, I never noticed Ben Rortvedt in the summer. You know, just a guy who gets to everything, blocks well.
Yeah.
You know, does seem to have a rapport with pitchers. Offensively, you know, kind of simple mechanics, line drive guy with authority to the pull side, can punch it to the opposite field gap if he needs to. Was pretty close to, you know, consensus second team. Did have some votes for first team though. But yeah, him and Cooper Johnson were far and away the top two vote getters as catchers. Let's see, these outfielders, Avery Tuck, man, that guy's got some strength to him.
Yeah.
It's a little bit raw off the bat, is a little bit raw, but if it comes together, shoot, he could be a good player. Taylor Trammell and Trey Carter, they can both really fly. They can really, really run. Trammell, he'll be interesting this spring, because, you know, when I talked to him at Under Armour, he mentioned, you know, his arm grades as a 40, if not a 30, at least last summer it did. And so a big thing for him is going to be developing arm strength. And so he said he's going to focus on that this offseason. So I'm excited to see how he comes out. I think at that point, Christian Jones too.
Mm-hmm.
Christian Jones, man, there's some real power there. I'm just infatuated with all these guys. Christian Jones, you know, we'll have to see, you know, some improvement in terms of how he handles spin. He was the kind of guy you could pound, you back foot a breaking ball to him, and you could get a swing and miss at the area code games, but also his first exposure to that kind of quality stuff. So that'll be something to monitor going forward. And then I think we've talked about everybody. Braxton Garrett, a loose lefty with a good changeup. So, and he'll be here in Cary for the NHSI at the USA Baseball Complex. He's going to be there, so we'll get another good look at him. So, a really good second team. You know, any of these guys, you know, in a any given year, you could see as first teamers, just because they have the tools. But you know, I'm high on this high school class. I think, I think the world of the first team as well. But, the second team's pretty good too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's plenty of talent on the third team as well. You know, you're talking about catchers. You know, we have one in our own backyard here, you know, in Durham, and Brad Debo. I'm sure we'll see him a lot this spring. I guess how does he compare to the other two catchers that we've talked about?
So kind of a tale of two amateur careers thus far, really, for Debo.
Mm-hmm.
As an underclassman, I mean, he was electric. As a rising junior, he was the MVP of Jupiter. and you know that's you know rooted in both offense and defense. Took you know I don't think anyone would deny that he took a step back this summer, and so it was interesting to see him do as well in the balloting as he did, and it was close. Some other guys, you know, getting votes: Mario Feliciano, Thomas Dillard, Sam Huff got a vote. So that, you know, a decent catching class in my humble opinion. But Debo, he has pull side power. The timing he's still working out, and the body, you know, he's a thick build. He's got, you know, it doesn't look too dissimilar to who were we just talking about? Rizzo. Mm-hmm. So there's some real over the fence power for Debo. But you know, we'll see. Oh, Brandon Marrano, another guy who was the MVP of Jupiter this year, also got votes. But yeah, Debo's a good looking prospect, and you know, it's a big spring for him. He's gonna have a chance to prove himself. He's gonna catch Bryce Wilson, a North Carolina commit, who you know is 90-93, you know, touch of four, pretty good slider. So you know, Debo certainly has a chance to prove himself yet again going forward. The rest of this team, I'm not sure how many of these guys you've seen. I know you've seen Charles King. Charles King is kind of like your guy at this point.
Yeah, he's one of my personal cheese balls, as we like to say at Baseball America. Yeah, he's a guy that I've seen a couple times, and you know the thing that I like about him is I did see a jump. You know, the second time I saw him compared to the first time, the velocity was up a few ticks. The first time I saw him, he was low 90s, you know, 90, 91. The second time in Jupiter, it was an 8 a.m. start, and he was touching 95.
Yeah.
In that first inning, it kind of, you know, came back down a little bit, you know, as it wore on, and the command wasn't great. I forgot exactly what the ratio was, you know, strikes to balls, but I know it wasn't too great. He got, you know, he struggled a little bit with command, but, you know, the velo's there. I know that the slider has gotten better. There's a little more length to it. There's a little bit more of a cutter, you know, the first time that I saw him, but it's something that he's worked on to improve that pitch. He's got a changeup too that he's still kind of tinkering with, but you know, he's a guy 6'5", you know, there's room to add a little weight there, you know, and, you know, another really bright kid, you know, another kid who seems to, you know, really understand what he's doing out there. He's just going to kind of have to corral some of those command issues a little bit and continue to work on his off-speed stuff. But, you know, someone who certainly has potential given his frame and, you know, velocity.
Yeah, and we have him listed as 6'5", 201. And so these weights, heights and weights we have on the site are, we have the official height and weight from the area code weigh-in. And if we don't, we go off of what they've, you know, what these kids have listed themselves at in different showcases. But so he's 6'5", 201 at the area code games, but he's probably, you know, 15 pounds bigger than that at this point. Because he was, you know, he went from a boy to a man in Jupiter. He was, you know, electric stuff.
Yeah.
95 with life, you know, and, you know, still learning to harness and control that stuff. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if he'll end up at Texas Christian, but, you know, if they got him, you know, they just have such a good track record with pitching.
Yeah.
And they have Nick Lodolo in this class as well, lefty from SoCal, who kind of unorthodox delivery, but really, you know, projects to be, you know, a really useful rotation guy for them as well.
Right.
Yeah, the third team, you know, I'm high on all these guys as well. But you know, here's where this is certainly where you start to see a drop off. That first and second tier is represented well on the first and second team, and then here these guys are all good, but they're not. You know, these are some of the cusp guys who. Some of these guys will go to school. Some of these guys will go pro.
Right.
But it, you know, it's going to be close based on, you know, signability and what these guys want and everything.
Yeah. No, I mean, I know one guy who's interesting to me is Alex Spies. You know, certainly someone who sounds like he's still very raw at this point in time. But, you know, he's flashed some, you know, premium velocity at times. You know, certainly seems like there's a lot of potential there with him.
Yeah, I mean, the arm speed is stupid.
Yeah.
It's you don't need a radar gun to know that that guy's throwing upper 90s. I mean, it's explosive. He's loose. He's 6'4". He has a slider. When this guy is in the zone and in the strike zone, he's similar to Pint in some respects, because he has a little bit of track record of being wild.
Yeah.
But you're looking at a guy who has some serious stuff, eighth inning stuff if starting doesn't work out. So
right.
Upper, you know, I feel like I've seen this guy at 96.
Yeah.
There's more in the tank. Yeah, I've heard 98 on him. I think this is a guy. If there's a second triple digits arm in this class, it might be him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Pint being the other one, and also I could see Greg Veliz getting there as well, bumping 98 this spring. But yeah, the Spies is really good. And, you know, we have two lefties in this group, in Cole Reagans and Ryan Hare. What's interesting about those two guys is they both pitched at East Coast Pro as underclassmen. So those guys, you know, were around and had their names circled early. Cole Reagans, kind of inconsistent this summer. When the breaking ball's on, it's a swing and miss pitch for him. When it's not there, you know, things can go wrong in a hurry. But an athletic left-hander, same high school as Carson and Cole Sands, and Matt Raley, I believe. I'm not sure who else was there, but good looking prospect. And then Ryan Hare, same high school as Madison Bumgarner, South Caldwell in Hudson, North Carolina. The, you know, probably the best name of a town in North Carolina, to be honest with you.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, what else? Zebulon's a pretty cool name, to be honest.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what I'm saying, to be honest. I'm being honest this whole time.
This is, yeah. Yeah, you're almost being a little too honest, I think.
To be honest, I'm...
Honestly, it's a little too much. This is going a little off the rails here, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, same, you know, same town as Madison Bumgarner.
Yeah, I mean, another lefty who's... Low 90s, okay. Yeah.
He's, I mean,
Madison Bumgarner, yeah, he's all right.
Yeah, I mean, he's done a couple of things that people have noted.
I think he's struck a couple guys out in his career. Yeah. Don't
not much
me
of a
that.
Winner, though.
Not much of a winner.
Yeah.
Doesn't compete, does he?
Mm-mm. No, he's very soft.
No, yeah, he's... man, but actually, I love Madison Bumgarner, and yeah. and you know, to place those kinds of expectations on anybody would be unrealistic. But you know, Ryan Hare, he's a legit prospect, and you know, some are more lukewarm on him, and then you'll find guys who've seen him. I've never seen it, but I've heard he's been up to 94 from the left side, and has a quality breaking ball that is the same kind of deal. It's going in the right direction. Was pretty good in Jupiter. And, you know, has some command, too. Was commanded at the area code games as well. And, he's, you know, he's 6'3", 6'4". You know, he's got some starter traits to him.
Yeah.
And then the last pitcher on this team is Matt Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a lot of president names in this class with Rutherford and Cleveland. And there's probably a Grover somewhere.
Do we have a Taft?
We don't. We have an Obama. No. We don't have an Obama. But Cleveland kind of popped up late, just before the area code games started to build up some buzz.
Right.
Also pitched on that Northeast Yankees tour. Not against the Cape team, but I think against a Futures League or any CBL team. In a kind of scrimmage exhibition thing, and pitched well there. Then pitched at the area code games. He touched 94. Big, loose right-hander, clean finish to the delivery. Same kind of deal. Breaking ball was just not good for him. First, you know, the first couple breaking balls he threw at the area code games were just flat or loopy, and you know, it got better every time he threw it. So
yeah.
You like to see guys going in the right direction. You know, Matt Cleveland ranked number 34 in the class. you know, which is pretty impressive considering, you know, he was an unknown.
Right.
You know, a few weeks, like, leading up to the area code game, which is one of the final events of the summer. So he's certainly on the radar now. And, you know, obviously he was voted by scouting directors as one of the top 15 pitchers in the nation. So.
Right. It's not too shabby.
Not too shabby.
No. Yeah. I mean, certainly you look at this third team and, you know, plenty of talent here. But, you know, like you said, you know, guys that on the cusp possibly, you know, guys that maybe a little more, a few more questions with them than, you know, the first two teams here.
Yeah, I think, and there are some more divisive guys here too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, so like a guy like Drew Mendoza has some big fans, you know, for the power, and some people do see him, you know, sticking that short, I think. But, you know, for us, he was on the ballot as a third baseman. He was voted there. Thomas Jones, you want to talk about ceiling? Thomas Jones might have the biggest ceiling of anybody on this third team. Took an outrageously good BP at East Coast Pro. Committed to Vanderbilt. Has some speed, has arm strength, is a football player as well. You know, I believe was recruited as a safety, and there was some discussion that he might play both at Vanderbilt, but I'm not sure where that's at. But that guy's really athletic. Akil Baddoo is really athletic and really run.
Great name too.
Akil Baddoo, yeah. I mean, he's a bad guy. He's a bad son of a... I don't know. His bad's in his name. It's written all over him.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Austin Langworthy is the third outfielder on that team. Tiny little guy who can hit. That's kind of the MO on Langworthy. Mm-hmm. Not really... not sure if he plays, you know, where he plays best. Probably plays best in the left field. He's also a left-handed pitcher who's, like, low to mid-80s. But just a gamer who I could see ending up at Florida and being an impact player as a freshman. Walker Robbins, big time bat, first base profile. Gavin Lux, wiry, quick twitch guy who has some swing and miss. You know, similar but different to Delvin Perez in that the bat is going to be the biggest question for him.
And right.
I don't think he's got quite the power that Perez has. But he can really run, and he can really play shortstop, and he's still got to figure out how to use those tools defensively. And I think that about covers it.
Going back to Baddoo for a moment, if this isn't already his nickname, I'd like to nominate Yabba Dabba as his nickname.
Yabba Dabba Baddoo?
Yabba Dabba Baddoo, yeah.
That's a tongue twister. Yabba Dabba Baddoo, make it so.
Yeah, let's do it. I think that about covers...
That's it for the All-Americans, but we also, it's the opening weekend of college baseball, man.
Yeah, man.
Are you fired up?
I'm fired up, man. I'm ready to go. I think, you know, both of us are going to be over at the DPAP tomorrow for some Cal-Duke action, which should be fun. We got Dalton Jeffries against Bailey Clark, you know, two high-profile right-handers going at it, so...
Yeah, and we have Teddy Cahill going down to Myrtle Beach on Friday. Going to see Connor Jones against Eric Lauer.
Another great matchup.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the better matchup.
Yeah.
But I could be convinced otherwise. You know.
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, we'll see more Vila probably.
Yeah.
Because Lauer isn't going to, you know, overwhelm with Vila.
Right.
But. Lauer, a left-hander with pretty good slider, really good command, some change up there. So, and then Connor Jones, who, you know, in the right inning, you'll see 3+ pitches from him.
Yeah,
big year for him if he puts it all together. But yeah, we're gonna see Bailey Clark, who's a guy who's, you know, been, you know, up to 96 this spring.
Yeah.
Change up has gotten a lot better. Athletic frame, big, like 6'4", 6'5", type, plus beard.
Yeah, and that's important.
He's from Asheville, so he's a little crunchy, as we like to call Asheville people. I don't know. but it's a really good matchup. And Dalton Jeffries, also a guy with three pitches that'll work. So
yeah. And Cal, of course, is our number 8 team in our top 25. A team that, you know, we have high expectations for, and certainly they have high expectations for themselves. I mean, they return most of their roster, most of their starters. So, and Duke could be sneaky good. I mean, Duke has some arms.
I'm a believer in Duke. Yeah. I think they have depth of arms, too.
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking about their opening three this weekend is Clark Swart. Trent Swart, who's coming back from injury,
mm-hmm.
Who was a significant part of their rotation a couple years ago,
mm-hmm.
And then you have on Sunday they're going to throw Brian McAfee, who is a transfer from Cornell, mm-hmm. Really good command guy. I saw him last year shut down UVA for 7 innings.
Yeah,
88-90 sharp short slider and changeup that goes in the opposite direction as well, heavy fastball. So I think Duke's good. I think, and when you talk about having a 6'10" lefty named James Yimba in the bullpen,
mm-hmm.
Carl Blum, another arm, they're it's almost an embarrassment of riches in terms of the depth. I think North Carolina, when we look at the ACC rotations, has much more punch,
mm-hmm.
and probably NC State as well. But I think they're going to be sneaky good this year.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I think the ACC as a whole, it's going to be, the middle of the ACC, it's going to be really interesting to see how it shakes out. At this point, I'm not sure how I would predict it, because I think Duke has a case. Notre Dame is an Omaha sleeper for me. UNC has, you talk about the pitching staff that they have, their rotation is loaded.
We haven't even gotten into Louisville.
Yeah.
I forget about Louisville because they're all the way out in Kentucky, but
yeah,
their rotation.
Yeah. Arguably the best team in the country. Them and Florida are neck and neck.
I'll take Florida over them, and we did.
I think Wake Forest has some potential if they can find pitching. If Parker Dungey, I know they're going to be relying on him as their Friday starter.
I popped in for an intra-squad over there a couple weeks ago, and Will Craig on the Cape this summer, looked tired.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't look like a guy who was, hitting all these home runs and was a Golden Spikes finalist. But I saw him in intra-squads, and man, he looked like a different guy than he did this summer. The bat speed was back.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't throw him a pitch outside of the strike zone and expect him to swing at it.
Yeah.
He's just a really good, I think he's going to have a big year for them. And then, Mondu and, mm-hmm. and freshman Johnny Aiello looked great.
And they have Stuart Fairchild, who had a really nice freshman year last year in the outfield. So, they return most of their starting lineup. Hitting is not going to be a problem for them, especially not in that ballpark,
because
mm-hmm. It's a bandbox. But, I think it's just figuring out the pitching staff.
The two guys I saw that kind of stood out for me pitching-wise, and I was only over there for a little while waiting for a Millersville Winston-Salem State game to start across town,
mm-hmm.
but
hot ticket.
Yeah, it was pretty good arms over there. Yeah. But so I only saw a couple Wake Forest arms, but I saw Johnstone, who was a command guy who could really hit his spots.
Mm-hmm.
Like a mid to upper 80s guy, and then this freshman Griffin Roberts, who just a really loose live arm, who's mm-hmm. also upper 80s, but just watching him, you could see there's low 90s in there, mm-hmm. and could really spin a breaking ball. So, I don't know what exactly their plans are. I think they're going to go with, I guess it's Dungey is going to be their Friday guy.
Yeah, it's looking like Dungey, at least in the survey. We have coaches fill out surveys for us, at least in the information they provided to us. It looks like Dungey is going to be the guy. I know Craig's going to get some time on the weekend, too. He started for them last year on the weekend. And, he's a guy he's a hitting prospect, all the way draft-wise. But, he's a guy who can, sit in the low 90s. I saw him touch 93.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a serviceable breaking ball. It's not a major league quality breaking ball by any stretch, but, mm-hmm. enough to get hitters out. So, it'll be interesting to see if they can piece it together. So...
Hmm. Yeah.
And BC, I know we both agree.
BC too.
It's interesting too. Yeah.
And we haven't even really gotten into UVA.
Yeah.
The defending national champions who,
yeah,
who bring a lot of those bats back. They lose quite a bit in the rotation with, with Kirby and Spores and I believe, and who's the lefty?
Waddell.
But, you know, bats-wise, you have Pavin Smith, who, you know, in terms of sophomores, might be the best hitter in the country as a sophomore.
Yeah, he's paving the way to start.
Ernie Clement, a guy I like. Daniel Pinero came back.
I like Daniel Pinero a lot. I think he's an underrated.
That guy has some over-the-fence ability.
Yeah.
You know? And it looks like they're starting a freshman in the weekend rotation, so they may have some growing pains early in the season, but they had growing pains early in last season, and it worked out pretty well for them.
Yeah, I mean, half their team last year are freshmen, so I think they're going to really benefit from, obviously, the learning experiences that they had last year and going through all the adversity that they did go through. I mean, not only did they have a young team last year, but, you know, they suffered through injuries last year.
Right.
You know, to bring that all together and, obviously, to win a national championship, I mean, that says a lot. So I do think, I mean, we think very highly of them. I think we have them at our number four. By the time I memorize this poll, it's going to be different. But but I think you know, Connor Jones is going to be, you know, key for them, you know, pitching wise. You know, because like you said, you know, some innings he looks unhittable, but in every start that I've seen him in, and, you know, I've talked to coaches who have kind of said the same, there's always one inning where you can get to him.
Yeah.
There's an inning where things kind of unravel for him a little bit, and if he can kind of try to find a way to eliminate that inning, and just, you know, grind through it, you know, then there's no reason why. I mean, he could be a potential, you know, conference pitcher of the year, you know, no question. Yeah. He has the stuff. So,
the stuff is electric. I mean,
the splitter really came on for him at the end of, like, that, you know, honestly, seeing him in Omaha, the splitter is really what impressed me most about his repertoire.
Is that a split grip or is that a straight, like, a forkball? I mean, I don't know what that is.
Well,
like a changeup.
He calls it a splitter. Talking to him, talked to him opening weekend. As a pitch he was trying
definitely
to
has splitter action to it.
Yeah. So as a pitch he's trying to incorporate more into his repertoire. It's a pitch that he added late his freshman year, late in the year. Mm-hmm. And then just really worked on it over the summer and, you know, started throwing a lot more and obviously to great success. So
And then on top of that, we have a guy who can bring it up to 96 and has a pretty good slider.
Yeah, and it's a heavy fastball.
Yeah, it's
got some life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be interesting to talk to him about, see, you know, two-seam, four-seam, what exactly he's doing with that. Because I do recall in, when they played Maryland in the Super Regional, I just went for the Friday game to see him versus Shawarin.
Yeah.
And that was awesome. Those two are, you know, potentially first-round picks. And that was kind of the beginning of my look at the 2016 class. But the, when Jones would go arm side with his fastball, it just had so much sink.
Yeah.
Like, you might be able to get a bat on that, but that's a pitch that's really difficult to do damage with.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me, so, you know, and also Spores. Spores had a heavy fastball, too.
Yeah. And that slider.
Yeah.
Nasty. I mean, he would go to his... I saw him against FSU. He came out of the bullpen and he threw all sliders. It was like seven sliders in a row.
Yeah, just he was not afraid of doubling or tripling up on that.
Yeah.
I mean, we could probably talk about baseball all day.
I mean, we kind of do.
We should just change this over to a Periscope and just...
Yeah, just every day, just Periscope.
Just Periscope life all our conversations at BA. Yeah. We gotta get some John Rants on there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should. We can delve into some politics now if you'd like. But maybe
you want to delve in? Oh, Delvin Perez.
That's Delvin Perez. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
But I think we've reached a stopping point here. If there's anyone out there still listening.
Follow us on Twitter. Mike's at
Emlinana.
I'm at Hudson Belinsky.
He is.
Check out baseballamerica.com/store to subscribe now. We have minor league seasons coming up. College season starts on Friday. We have a lot of really great content coming, and our team's in pretty good shape right now. Not physically. We're all in bad shape, but, you know, we're all sharp right now. We're ready to go. We're fired up. So I think now, if you're going to subscribe to BA, is the perfect time.
Yeah, no. Subscribe now before the first pitch is thrown.
Do it.
Do it.
For Mike Lanana, I'm Hudson Belinsky. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon. Group, I've seen a lot of these guys a lot. We had four unanimous first team guys: Jason Groom.